Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudou.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
In this episode, we're going to do a wrap-up of last week's 59th annual conference for the American Translators Association that took place in New Orleans in Louisiana. We are going to focus on what we learned from attending the conference in general and from some of the specific sessions we attended as well.
So I thought I'd kick off with a few big picture things. For anyone who wasn't there, the ATA conference ran from Wednesday through Saturday of last week, and we're recording this on November 1st, so it was the last week of October. And it started with what we call Advanced Skills and Training Day, which is three-hour sessions for experienced translators and interpreters that go into depth on one topic. That was Wednesday. Then we had the welcome reception on Wednesday evening, which if you've never been to it, is like a wedding reception with 1,000 people there. And that was followed by the opening session and the election session on Thursday. Then we had all the conference regular sessions are an hour long. So we had those all day Thursday. And then I think everyone's one of their favorite things is the honors and awards session where we give out lots of prizes and nice congratulations and the meeting of all ATA members. That was Friday morning. Then there were more sessions all day Friday and Saturday. There were 175 educational sessions altogether. And then the closing session on Saturday night. And I never attend the conference dance, but I know Eve dropped in on it for a minute.
I did. I don't usually do it, and it was super fun. There were a lot of our Colorado peeps were there, and so I'm usually too tired by then, right. But I actually had some energy for some reason, and it was really fun. I'm too old maybe for some of the music. No, I'm just kidding. But it was some stuff that I, you know, was hip hop or I don't know what it was. Right. But most of it was really fun, and then there was some bunny hop and some other stuff, so it was very exciting.
Cool. And Ted Wozniak, who's the current ATA president-elect, and the president-elect is always the conference organizer, he did a really incredible job as conference organizer. So during the ATA board meeting over the weekend, I said, one of the hardest jobs in ATA is to take a good program and make it even better. And Ted really did that. So some new things that we had this year, I think our sessions are all, if I can say so, our sessions are always high quality. I mean, I think in the, my first conference was 2004. So in the 14 years I've been attending the conference, the sessions are always high quality just because we have so many to choose from. But this year, Ted introduced some new innovations, which were the commemorative ATA 59 pins. We're going to try to do a commemorative pin for every conference so you can collect them all. The job fair, which I think is particularly a hit with our newer members, we had something like 31 agencies attend, and they all have tables where you can go around and do like a sort of speed dating interview with them. Ted expanded that to two nights, so I think it made it less crowded and less chaotic. And then also, if you couldn't go one night, you could go the other night. He had a headshot photographer, so like the school picture studio of the ATA conference where you could go and get headshots for $30. So I think anyone who has done headshots with a, you know, private professional photographer knows that it's usually at least, you know, add a zero to $30.
Right, much, and that's more, much more expensive.
Yeah, yeah, sort of the minimum you would pay for a private headshot photographer. And I didn't do it because I just got headshots a couple years ago at the CTA, Colorado Translators Association conference, through a similar deal. But the people I know who did the headshot photographer were very happy with it. And then also, the 2 years that I organized the conference, I made you guys sit through a closing keynote speaker. Ted got rid of the closing keynote speaker. And I was skeptical, but I think everybody really appreciated the short and sweet closing session. It was purely fun stuff and the wrap-up video. And everyone is so tired by the end of the week that I actually think the short and sweet closing session worked great. So I can't wait to see what Ted's going to do in Palm Springs next year. And let's not forget that Eve, now Director Linda Muth Baudoux, was elected to the ATA board.
Thank you.
So we're super proud of her, as was our other new director, Megan McCallum Conkle. Those of you who know her, she recently got married and changed her name. So she used to be Megan McCallum. Now Megan Conkle was elected to the board. And then two returning directors, Melinda Gonzalez-Hibner and Tony Guerra, were re-elected. And it was also really great to meet some of our podcast listeners in person. So we get about 1,000 downloads to each episode, but sometimes I think I still have the fear that like 999 of them are my mom. But in reality, a bunch, and I'm not saying that to brag about us, I'm saying that it was really wonderful that a bunch of people came up and told us that they really benefit from the podcast and look forward to it, which is of course why we do it. So Eve, over to you. Why don't you give us your big picture view of the conference?
Yeah, well, I don't know if mine's as big picture, but I'll give you my view of the conference.
Yeah,
my bird's eye view.
Overview. Yeah.
So normally I actually don't do a lot of touristy stuff. And so I've been going to the conference a long time. So I've gone to, I think, at least 20, I have to count it up, but 19 or 20. And so I don't usually do touristy stuff because the conference itself is so compelling, and I'm not kidding. Yeah, it's so compelling that I normally don't do that. But this year I just felt like I had some space and I took a tour of the city. And so we always visit really great cities, interesting cities, you know, that are history or very interesting tourist attractions. And so, you know, I kind of think after this year, if you can fit that in, do it, you know, but don't sacrifice the conference itself for the tourist stuff. But I like doing that. I took a four-hour guided tour, and I saw a lot of the city. So that was interesting and fun. So Corinne, you mentioned the welcome reception, which everybody loved. It's always super fun. I like what your description of it was, that it's just like a huge wedding, because you feel like that you're running around, you know, trying to greet people. I think it gives you the lay of the land and the kind of the energy for the conference too. It's impressive in that big, huge space. It's usually in a ballroom, right, Corinne? I mean, it's a huge room. I assume that's the hotel ballrooms.
Yes, it's in, I think they could have made the ballroom even bigger, but it's in a ballroom like where you would have an enormous wedding reception.
Yeah, it's a huge room, like some huge event. So
yes.
Anyway, so then, so it's a big, there's, you know, food, and it's always interesting food, and there's always kind of a local flavor to the food there. And I also think that it's impressive to see all the tables for all the divisions that are represented, and it shows you the diversity of interests within our organization. And you can also go around and usually get information from any of them that they want. They have pre-printed information. Like if you think, oh, I really want to join the SciTech division, and I haven't, you know, I don't know what they offer, then they will offer a paper that you can take with you and find out, you know, all the different things that they offer you. I always like to attend the exhibit hall too, even if it's quick. This year it was pretty quick, but I did get to, you know, go by all the vendors. There's tools vendors there. They provide the free tech help, that, you know, not sales. It's called the tool support stations, and I think that's always helpful. This year I didn't actually need it, but usually I do, and you know, have some little question, you know, little question that's been bugging me about my tool, and so I'll go and ask them, and that's really great.
And for anybody who's never been there, I think that's something that's perhaps a bit unique to this conference. We started that, I don't know how many years ago in the recent past.
Mm-hmm. That, yeah, 4 or 5. Something like
that all of the translation tool vendors who are there, obviously they have salespeople, but they have free one-on-one tech support. So when you think like, here's this weird thing that my software always does, or here's this thing I've always wanted to know how to do and I can't learn it from a webinar, you can just walk up there with your laptop and have one of their tech people help you with it.
Yeah. So, and also just in general in the exhibit hall, I always like to check it out because I feel like it helps you keep in touch with trends or just see new opportunities, different trends, things that are going on in the wider industry. And I think that's interesting for that. Corinne, I wanted you actually to talk about, the dictionary exchange, because you had some fun comments about that.
Yes. So I love being proven wrong about things like this. So Jost Zetsche, who I think a lot of you probably know, he's a super tall German guy who is a translation technology guru, writes the Toolbox newsletter, which you should subscribe to if you don't. It's donation-based. That's not an affiliate deal. I just think it's a great source of tech information. So I also had the privilege of making Jost an honorary member of ATA.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, this year, which was really fantastic. So Yoast approached me and Ted a couple of months ago with this idea of having a paper dictionary exchange. And I believe that the impetus was, Yoast can correct me if I'm wrong, I think the impetus was that a colleague of Yoast's is going to retire and had a large collection of dictionaries that he felt would not probably be sold at a used bookstore and would end up being trashed if they didn't go to someone other than a translator. So he approached me and Ted, and I will be totally honest and say, I only said yes to it because it was Yoast. But I thought, I personally do not use paper dictionaries, barely ever. And the only paper dictionaries I have even kept is very specialized ones that, for example, mm-hmm. I got in France. Like I have a French to French thesaurus and a French contracts dictionary and stuff like that. And the only reason I keep those is they're basically impossible to replace.
I feel like you, yeah. When, and mm-hmm. and some of you probably know, I think I mentioned this before, I moved a year and a half ago, and then I took, because I thought, oh, I don't have any dictionaries to donate to the to the dictionary exchange at the conference, because most of them I'd given away or gotten rid of. And when I especially when I actually realized, oh, the years go by and how old they were. But like you, I do have a couple special, really specialized hard copy ones that are, you know, hard to get the information otherwise, or it's not available on the web and that kind of thing. But yeah, I felt like you.
Right. So I thought, you know what, this is something that I would personally never participate in. But because it's Yoast, I'll say yes to it because every idea Yoast has is a good idea. So, and I even told Yoast that he had to figure out what to do with the leftover dictionaries because I thought, like, if people bring 100 dictionaries, 97 are going to be left over, and then we have to figure out what to do with them.
How to get rid of them, yeah.
Exactly. Take them, donate them to a used bookstore or something. So, in the end, long story short, 350 dictionaries were donated and only 8 were not claimed.
That's pretty amazing. So, yeah.
Yes, yes. So Yoast put them in a grocery bag and walked them over to a used bookstore that was excited to get them, one that was near the hotel. So
I didn't have to rent a big truck.
No, I told him, right, this might be a U-Haul job to get rid of these extra paper dictionaries. And in the end, 350 donated, all but 8 were claimed. It was a huge hit. And I even saw people collecting dictionaries that they were going to use at the ATA exam sitting that very weekend. So I was totally wrong about that. We'll try to do it again.
Good. Well, another thing I always like, and I mentioned it, I think, in a previous episode, but I didn't get to go this time, but I was sad, was the After Hours Cafe. It's where people read kind of more their literary-focused works in translation. And I think that their approach is, it's put on by the literary division, is that you can read your own works in translation, or you can read a translation that you particularly liked. But the times I've gone, people read their own works in translation. And it's just really fun to see people's passion. And one time I even saw someone singing a song that they had translated. You know, he had this guitar and he was singing and he was a good singer. So it's kind of a relaxed, a fun, open mic type night. So that's fun too. And I just wanted to say too, as Corinne, as you said, it was really fun to meet some of our listeners in person. And it was wonderful to get their feedback. And I wanted to say too, as we say at the end of the episode, of course, you don't have to meet us in person to give us your feedback. You can always email us or tweet us. But it was really special to be able to meet people. And, you know, it's just so great. Like we all know, we all work in our own little, in our own little world. I was gonna say bubble, but I don't really want to use that term. Mm-hmm. But it's really great to meet people in person. So yeah.
Yeah. Great. So Eve, we know that you had a major role in planning the French sessions since you were the outgoing administrator of the French language division. And by the way, thanks for the really incredible energy that you put into that job over the past, it was 4 years, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the amount of stuff you've been able to do is amazing. And I think that the speakers in the French track were particularly high quality and high profile this year. So I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about those speakers and how you found them.
Yeah, so normally what I try to do, just any of the years I was in charge of, you know, kind of encouraging people to submit and that kind of thing, I've always tried to be like really positive, try to recruit people in the sense of recruit in quotes, kind of, because we actually, I'll talk about that in a minute, we actually do kind of literally recruit the invited speaker, and who this year was Muriel Gilbert, and I'll talk about her a little bit more. But for the other speakers, I recruit them in the sense of just trying to encourage people to share their knowledge, or sometimes people, if they've never spoken before, it seems daunting to them. And I do think that people, even who've never presented before, often do get accepted, you know, even though we'll talk about that a little bit later too, that it can be a competitive process. But I think that even if you've never presented before, if you have a strong proposal, you can be accepted. Mm-hmm. And so I've helped craft proposals and, you know, if they want, even if they were outside my division, just as someone who's been a past presenter and also someone who reviews other people's proposals as the administrator of the French language division, which is the case, you know, kind of making it, extrapolating out for other people, this process applies, you know, for any division, and though I'm not sure exactly, you know, the personality of each division head and how they look at their speakers, but I assume it's similar. So, so we really want people to share their knowledge, and everybody, you know, has their specific niches or specific approaches that they have that can be helpful to others. So, the other thing is that there are some resources out there if you are interested in presenting and you're not sure about how to go about it. There is a webinar out there that's free on the ATA website about how to craft, I think, Corinne, it's called How to Craft a Winning Conference Proposal.
Yes. And so I think the two biggest misconceptions out there is that you can't be accepted as a new speaker and that veteran speakers always get accepted. Neither of those things is true. And the reason I know that is because I actually presented that webinar on how to write a winning conference proposal and was subsequently rejected from the conference that very same year. So I think, though, just know if you've never presented before, like I believe that there were a couple of people whose presentations I saw this year who had never presented at the ATA conference before who were amazing. So, you know, go for it. And if you're a veteran speaker, don't assume that you're going to be accepted every year.
Yeah, I think one of the things too is, as one of the people who encouraged people, I did try to get new people in because I think we always want, it's good to have, you know, solid good speakers that we know are going to be really great, but it's good to get new people in the pipeline too and expose us to new ideas. So that was, I think that's part of your thing too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just kind of summarizing for our division, which like I said, it can probably be extrapolated to other divisions. This year we had, for example, Marc Lambert, who came from Quebec, and he gave a really great session on improving your style. And like you said, Corinne, his was in French, which is really great for us because, as we know, at the conference, there could be, you know, there's tons of languages spoken in conferences and different presented in different languages too. Mm-hmm. But for the French division in particular, it was really wonderful this year that we had a lot of people presenting in French. So I think everybody really liked that as opposed to in English. Yep. And then Ellen Comte, she is one of our members and she had gave a really wonderful presentation. And to my knowledge, I think she also was a first time presenter.
I think so. Conference. I don't want to say that for sure because I know she does a lot of presenting in other places, but I think Ellen maybe was presenting at ATA for the first time and her session was amazing.
Oh yeah, it was amazing. It was slang in the judiciary. I'm speaking more clearly. Slang in the judiciary. You know, use of French, basically in this case French slang. And I thought like, oh whatever. It was really wonderful. Mm-hmm. And all these people who spoke were very wonderful speakers who were able to speak without notes or even if they spoke with notes, just seemed very engaged and with their audience. So, and then, like Corinne said, to tell you guys a little bit about asking the invited speaker, what you do for the ATA is there's a deadline by which you have to submit the person's name. And so you want to, you know, figure out like what kind of speaker you want. Is it someone outside the industry? Is it someone inside the industry? Will they be interested in coming to talk for us? What can they add? You know, why would they be interesting to ATA members? So it's a lot of pressure, trying to get people that, someone to speak that would be interesting and who's a little bit different than our normal speakers in some fashion. So I ended up getting, on the recommendation of other members in our group, I contacted Muriel Gilbert, and she's a recognized expert in France on the French language. And she's been on radio and TV, and she has a standing radio show that's also podcasted, a short segment that she does on French language. And I just love that about the French. Like, I think, like, you know, would we really be able to, would be kind of a semi-celebrity, you know, in the U.S. if you were an expert in the English language? I'm not so sure about that. So that was really appealing. And she's also an author, and she's a proofreader at Le Monde, the famous newspaper in France. So she spoke on gender neutral and feminization issues in French and current trends and challenges in that. And what I think is also, again, we can extrapolate to others. I had other people who speak other languages talking to me about that, because languages and gender issues for languages that actually use gender as opposed to English, you know, feminine, masculine, neutral and stuff like that. It was a very timely topic. So So Corinne, I wanted to ask you what your favorite sessions were. Before I do that, I wanted to, you know, thank you again to everyone who submitted a session, and of course to everyone who was able to actually present. Yeah. So tell us about some of your favorite sessions.
Yeah. So, with all the ATA meetings that I go to during the conference, I sadly miss a lot of sessions, but I make a commitment to go to some as well. Mm-hmm. So I think the three people you mentioned, those may be, other than the sessions I presented, I think those were the only ones I attended, but they were just dynamite. So mm-hmm. Muriel Gilbert is, if any, I think the closest equivalent in the US would be a few years ago, Mary Norris, who's a proofreader for The New Yorker, who she's been a proofreader for The New Yorker for like 30 years, wrote mm-hmm. a book called Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comma Queen. And I think Muriel Gilbert, to me, is like, you know, she's definitely at that level, at least, or maybe even better. She was amazing. And then I went to Marc Lambert's French style presentation, and then Hélène Comte's legal slang presentation. So I think the thing that stood out to me about them is, first of all, I think it's so fantastic to get to hear sessions in your non-English language if you live mm-hmm. in the US, because I think, to me, part of what I enjoy as someone who presents a lot is to see the different style that the French or Quebecois or whatever, people who don't live in the US, well, Hélène lives in the US, but she's French, mm-hmm. how they present as opposed to, you know, how I would present a session. And I think in general, they use sort of less flashy graphics, or for example, Muriel didn't do a PowerPoint at all. She just talked, but it was still very, very engaging and compelling. And that was interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. to me, just to hear native French speakers present, even though I don't translate into French, that was part of the benefit of the conference. And like you said, Eve, with Marc Lambert's French style presentation, you can mm-hmm. sort of reverse engineer it. The mm-hmm. same principles apply if you translate from French to English. And I think, you know, we were really lucky. A couple of people commented to me that they thought that the French lineup was the best in recent memory. And even I talked to a couple of translators who do French and another language, another non-English language, who said that they came to all of the French sessions because they were so good. So,
and something else I just wanted to point out again, just to make sure we extrapolate for everybody, is like, if you're thinking, that's nice, even Corinne, but I don't speak French, so, you know, that's not my language. This is just representative, I think, of yes. what the level that you'll see at the conference. And so I think in your language, in Portuguese and Spanish and Italian, just because I'm pretty familiar with them, they always have wonderful, wonderful speakers
they
too,
do.
And wonderful people yeah. they bring over from Italy for their invited speaker. So the point is that we can speak specifically to the French group, but we know right. that the other divisions and other groups, not just divisions, have, you know, wonderful speakers as well.
Right.
And that you will like them if you come and you've never
right.
been.
Yeah. And I think just, you know, one thing that the ATA conference is great for is if, like me, you live in the US, you translate into English, and you have a shortage of opportunities to use your non-English language, that getting to hear people present about language and translation in your non-English language is a really valuable part of the conference. And other, as mm-hmm. you said, Eve, other divisions do that too. I know, for example, whoever organizes the sessions for the Italian division really, really works their tail off to get mm-hmm. good speakers. Because, for example, one year they had a really prominent Italian fiction writer and his translator who came to talk
cool.
about, yeah, I know.
And like a couple of years ago, they had a really high level marketing executive that's really yeah. famous, I guess, like known for these wonderful marketing, you know, like right. advertising campaigns in Italy. That's yeah. Giovanna Massari, I could say.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah. And so I also wanted to say that I was really impressed with the quality of the candidates for the board. And I'm not saying that just because I have to. It's really true.
No, I was too. Yeah, it was. Everyone, a lot of people said that it was hard to cast the votes. It was hard to make your choices.
Right. We had six people for three positions, and I really felt like I could have voted for any of the six for different reasons. So I think, you know, that's another thing within ATA that we're really thrilled by is the quality of the people who are willing to put themselves forward for the board. So thanks to everybody who ran. So speaking of that, Eve, Director Lindemuth Baudot, now that you've been elected to the board, I wondered if you wanted to give our listeners any insights into what it was like to prepare for that and to run, again, so that people understand a little bit about the process and perhaps if they would be interested in running for the board at some point, to hear your perspective on what it was like.
Yes, I would be glad to do that. So I want to emphasize, for me in any case, and I'm sure for other candidates, it was a long process and I felt like it was a serious process because you are putting yourself out there, you know, and putting your ideas out there and putting and kind of asking people to approve of you or not approve
right.
of you.
No.
But I think, like you said too, the but for any all of the candidates, you know, receive many votes, so they're approved in any case, even if they're not elected. But so I think for me it was, you know, thinking why seriously about why do I want to run? Can I verbalize that? And what can I contribute, you know, if I'm elected? So part of the process was you come up with your candidate statement, you know, talking, at least my approach was, you know, talking to someone about who I am and what I've done so that people could kind of see, okay, you know, why might she be a good contributor to the board? And then also, you know, things that you are important to you within the ATA or issues that you want to address. So so that was published we wrote it in the summer and then it comes out in the fall. So you're kind of like, oh, I put all this energy into this. And, you know, and of course, it's, you know, a long process and then it comes out. It's published on the web and also in the journal, the printed journal for the Chronicle for the American Translators Association. And then a little bit later, closer to the election, we did a podcast interview and then they asked questions and it's kind of an interesting thing because they ask questions, but then you just kind of, you know, are talking on into the void or whatever, answering your questions. So that's kind of an interesting process. And then people are able to download those for all the candidates and hear, you know, hear them talking too, instead of just writing. And I really like that we had that opportunity to be speaking as well as expressing ourselves in writing. So, and then, as you know, Corinne and others may know, the culmination of all that is giving a speech at the conference in front of your peers, like right before the election takes place. You know, the people can vote in advance too if they're voting members, but then also at the conference, then the voting physical voting takes place for people who want to vote in person there, and then it's over. And so, another thing that I did was during my process, I asked different of my colleagues, tried to ask, you know, 20 of my colleagues as a sampling, people that I've known in the ATA or I know, are involved, what issues were important to them as I was running, you know, and any comments that they had to share with me as a candidate, because my idea was to kind of get a pulse on what things are important to members right now. So, so I'm honored and humbled to have been elected and I feel the weight of the responsibility. So thank you everyone. And Corinne, so do you want to give us any behind the scenes thoughts about the ATA conference from your perspective as the president of the ATA?
Sure. So for anyone who doesn't know, we choose the cities for the ATA conference about 5 years ahead. So right now we're looking at like 2023 for the ATA conference. We have typically always met at conference hotels. So we, you know, the whole conference is in one huge hotel and we're all there. But we are starting to sort of outgrow that model. So next year, which is great, you know, the conference is so successful that now we are pretty limited in the range of cities that we can look at because there are a lot of places that have no hotels large enough for us. So next year in Palm Springs, California, we're going to be in a small convention center. And for example, over the summer last year, the board went and looked at Portland, Oregon to have a conference there. And same situation, there are no conference hotels that would accommodate our size group, but they have a smallish convention center that we would have part of that we were actually really impressed with. So we're kind of branching out in the you know, range of options that we would think about. And I think one thing we try to look at is, some people love big cities, some people love small cities, west, east, central, you know, all of that stuff. So, you know, one thing I said at this conference is, people, when thinking ahead to Palm Springs, I feel like we have people who are really, really enthusiastic and people who are going to take some convincing because Palm Springs is a very small city. I think it's, I don't know, a few hundred thousand people, if I'm not mistaken. I should have looked that up, but it, you can walk around the entire downtown in about an hour. So I think the thing that's going to be really different about that is that we will pretty much be the only convention in town. Like,
so Corinne, as you're talking, I use the internet, you know, that we have to look at. The population is 48,000.
Oh my gosh. Holy cow. That's okay. So like, I live in Boulder, Colorado, which is a pretty small city that's 100,000, you know, permanent residents. So Palm Springs is half that size. Mm-hmm. So I think the interesting thing will be, you know, some, if we meet in a big convention center or sometimes even a big conference hotel, sometimes there's even another convention in the hotel. And in Palm Springs, we will be the only convention in the whole town, which I think will be a really interesting, you know, translators experience, and interpreters taking Palm Springs by storm.
That's right.
So I think this year, and again, I'm not saying this just to be nice, it's true, I think it was probably my favorite conference in a long time. This is a small thing, but it's the kind of thing that those of us on the ATA board kind of obsess over. We had a fantastic room for breakfast. So I feel like breakfast is, it seems like a small thing, like at home, you just sort of grab your muffin and coffee and run out the door. But at the conference, it really sort of sets the tone for the day. And if you remember last year in Washington, D.C., overall, we were really, really happy with that hotel and we had great attendance at that conference. But if anyone remembers the breakfast setup, it was very cramped. Both the space for the food and the space for people to sit, or more likely not sit, while they were eating.
And this, and Miami was a little bit like that too. Like, it seemed very full, very full.
Right, yeah. Right. And this year we had this huge ballroom. Even at the peak of breakfast attendance, so at, you know, 8 o'clock or whatever, like breakfast starts at 7:30 and the sessions or the start at 8:30. So even at sort of 8 o'clock, there were still empty seats left where people could actually sit at a table and have their breakfast. And there was this huge spread of all different kinds of food for every dietary persuasion. I'm a vegetarian, so I'm always sort of, you know, sense it up. Of course, there's always vegetarian food at breakfast, but just meaning, you know, I feel the pain of people who are gluten-free, dairy-free, you know, high carb, low carb, whatever, because I'm a vegetarian. And I think, you know, we had space for the hotel to put out a huge range of food. So again, it seems like a small thing, but I feel like everyone's in a good mood when they get their breakfast and some good conversation and coffee, and then they can, you know, head to their sessions in a relaxed manner. The quality of the sessions to me just keeps getting better and better. We received over 300 proposals for 175 sessions. And if you are interested in presenting next year, the call for sessions will go out in early January. So Eve, I thought maybe you wanted to talk about the process of actually reviewing the proposals. Like, once I upload my proposal on the ATA website, what happens to it and what are you looking for? And if I can just give one pro tip, sounds like a small thing, but isn't. We have so many proposals now that any proposal that is poorly written or has spelling mistakes is immediately rejected. So I think it sounds like a small thing, but the hard part is when we are cutting the volume of proposals by more than 50%, we have to have some metric for sessions that are not even considered. And one of those is the proposal is badly written, it has spelling mistakes, the person is not a native English speaker and obviously didn't have it proofed by a native English speaker, and things like that. So pay particular attention to that type of, you know, semantic thing if you want to submit. So Eve, why don't you talk to us about what you receive as a division administrator and what you're looking for in a proposal that would be accepted?
Yeah, thanks, Corinne. So yeah, I'm speaking from the perspective of the division administrator and the assistant administrator, actually, because we get to, there's always two reviewers in our division that review, for example, are the French related proposals, but it could be any division. And we read them really carefully and we look at the person's background. So you think about the bio that you're submitting as well, you know, that so kind of supports maybe not that particular topic, but if you can have something that's in there, but you know, that supports why you would be an authority on this particular thing. And also, just like Corinne said, I had this in my notes before she said that, it says, you know, we see your proposal an abstract as a reflection of how you will actually present. So does it contain errors? Does it seem logical? Like also just, you know, are there obvious errors, but then also is it coherent and that we can understand, you know, exactly what you're going to be presenting? Mm-hmm. Even if you're kind of talking at a high level, we need to have some idea of, you know, what you're actually talking about. Right. And so, you know, think about your abstract. And something that I've done over the years too, and for anything, but for an abstract is you know, don't do it at the last minute, you know, think about what you want to present about, write an abstract and have other people look at it, but also have yourself look at it. Maybe give yourself a week away from it and then go back to it and look at it, you know, because then you may think like, oh, that's, I thought this really was super clear when I wrote it. Yeah. But right. When I look back at it, it's not that clear and I can see how they might misconstrue this or whatever. So, yeah. So I said, is it clearly explained what you'll talk about? And then, so yeah, in the process, we do try to get a mix of topics. So specifically, you know, with division specific things, different years, I have, not rejected, sounds like a harsh word, but not chosen, you know, not chosen to refer on to the conference organizer, things that looked fine and they were well organized, but you know, the proposal itself, but we had just had that last year. And then another year, a recent year, the same topic was already presented on. And in addition, there's other competing proposals that are new and that look interesting and the people look interesting. So, you know, we try to get a good mix of topics. We try to get some new topics. And like we talked about earlier in the podcast, we try to get a good mix of new speakers to add to the mix, you know, so that they're in the pipeline too, you know, maybe a new speaker that we might use at other times. And also you see seasoned speakers that have good reviews, have had good reviews in the past and that are perennial favorites. So as we said again, this year, however, most people were new and it was still a great success. So, yeah. And I wanted to say too, that if you're accepted, the process might seem long to you because you may have written your abstract in the early spring. You might have written it in January and the deadline sometime, you'll have to look it up the exact day, but it's usually in March, the deadline. So even if you write it at the very last deadline, you know, it's still a long ways, months later that you present. And so one thing that I've always just thought as a person, as a member, as a attendee watching people present over the years, I've always thought, you know, I appreciate it when people are faithful to their abstract. So it's been a long time and they may think, oh, well, you know, 8 months ago, I was really interested in talking about blah, 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 blah. But now I really want to talk about X, Y, Z. Yeah. Please don't do that. Because people are coming, you know, to them, it's all
based
new.
Based on the
it's
abstract. Really.
Yeah. And so, and I think, you know, I have, and not to be rude, because I always try to give positive feedback in some fashion. Like I'm not someone, I you know, even if it wasn't my favorite over the years, even if it wasn't my favorite session that I'm watching, I'm saying as a member, you know, I don't think we mentioned this time, Corinne, too, that every session that's presented, people rate it. Attendees are asked to rate it, that the conference organizer and the ATA in general, you know, knows who are speakers who are well received and speakers who, you know, needed improvement and may not be asked back or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, So one of the things I've done, even if I didn't particularly like someone, especially if other people seem to like it, I'm not going to say like, I didn't like it, because I just feel like maybe it wasn't a good fit for me or whatever. So I don't usually say super negative stuff, but I will give feedback on if people aren't faithful to their abstract, I don't like that personally.
Right.
I will say, you know, they were whatever, you know, they were a fine speaker, but they didn't obey the abstract because that's what people are coming to hear.
Well, so, and I think, I mean, what you said is so true, that as a speaker, I mean, for example, this year, the Slavic division did some podcast interviews with presenters ahead of the conference, and they did that maybe a month or two ago. And I really had to say, okay, first let me look at what I said I was going to talk about. I mean, you, between the time that you get your acceptance and when you prepare the presentation, it is easy to even forget what you said you were going to do. But I think, Eve, you know, that's a great point, that people are coming based on the description that's in the program. And so saying, you know, oh, by the way, I'm not going to talk about that at all, because in the ensuing 7 months,
I got interested in something because I've had yeah. I've seen people do that. I've seen people do that, and I was like, "Are you kidding me?" You know, like you know, I had one time. And sometimes it's less obvious, but I did have one guy years ago literally say that, and I thought, "Well, I'm at," and then what he was talking about was of no interest to me at all, so I left. You know, and I gave the feedback that it wasn't yeah. appropriate.
So whatever. Even though in the ensuing 7 months, you clearly have some different ideas or new ideas or something like that, you owe it to the attendees to stay faithful to what you said you were going to talk about.
Yeah. And then just again, going back to the process, so we and the divisions or other groups that are able to give the, you know, kind of pre-select the speakers. And also I should explain, not to talk too much about this, but that we do have, it's not just like, that guy looks good to me. You know, there's really specific parameters, and we're asked to justify the reasons why we think that person would be interesting. We're asked if we've ever seen that person speak, if we know anything about their speaking style, that kind of thing. It's not just like, looks good, you know. And I have said, you know, like I would say like, okay, I'm rejecting this one because they look great, and I know that they're a good speaker, but we had that topic before. Or, this person is new, but I've heard really good things about them. I know they've presented elsewhere. You know, we have criteria that we have that we're asked to rate. In any case, once we are done with our pre-selection, then we do the conference organizer, like I said, has the bigger picture and has the final decision in any sessions that are at the conference. But anyway, and like Corinne said, there's many, many people apply now, and there's lots more applicants than slots. And so if you aren't accepted the first time, try again. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to wrap up, maybe we should give some tips for anyone who has never attended an ATA conference before, because surely after listening to this, you're thinking,
you are buying your ticket now for Palm Springs.
You are booking with your mileage points now, right, for Palm Springs next year, or perhaps Boston the year after. So I think one idea that we gave, for example, to people coming from Europe who might not have attended before because it's a long and tiring trip, I think Muriel Gilbert told us it took 23 hours to get from Paris to New Orleans. So if that applies to you, come to Boston in 2020.
Because I think, hop over the pond.
Mm-hmm, right. I mean, really to fly from one of the major Western European cities to Boston is about how long it takes people to fly across the U.S. to attend Palm Springs. So they're, you know, you have no excuse. Come, promise us you'll come to one of those two, Palm Springs 2019 or Boston 2020. So some of my tips, if you've never attended an ATA conference or similar event before, would be plan early for everything. Book your plane early, book your hotel early, register early, and also plan, make appointments with people who you want to see. So one thing I find is if you tell someone, let's just find each other at the conference and find a time to catch up, you never will. There were a couple of people at the conference who I intended to talk to who I never even saw except sort of, you know, floating by in a crowd on the way to a session. So book everything early. I would say I start getting or sending out social invitations for the conference at least in September and maybe August. So if the conference is in late October, if there are people who I really want to have, for example, a lunch or dinner with, I would start booking that at least in September and perhaps late August. Like usually as soon as I get back from my, you know, summer vacation, I start thinking about who I want to see at the conference. Attend your division's events, even if you don't know anyone. So for example, at the French language division dinner, I sat next to a woman who is a graduate student at NYU, never been to the conference before, didn't know anyone. And I think it was really valuable because you're sort of surrounded by a lot of experienced people who do the same thing you do when you go to your division's events.
And she won a door prize. So exciting for
her. She did. I know. Go Shaz, right? Shaz won a door prize. And I think two or three tips I always give to everyone, first timer or return attendee. Number one, go to at least one session that's in one of your peripheral areas of interest. So I think all of us have that thing that we think, someday I'd like to. For me, it's interpreting. For Eve, it might be literary translation. And if you go to one event in that track, I think it will keep that dream alive in your head. Number two, pace yourself and don't try to do everything. The conference is exhausting. I mean, there were days when I think I left my room at about 7 in the morning and didn't really, really get back to my room until about 11 p.m. at night. And I probably go to bed a lot earlier than a lot of people at the conference do. So it is exhausting. Just accept that you can't do everything you want to do and focus on the things that are most important to you. And then I think equally important, set a goal for why you are going. Going to the conference is a big investment of time and money, especially for the majority of us who pay for it ourselves and don't have an employer or someone like that sponsoring us. So are you going to get clients? Because then the job fair had better be a priority for you. Are you going for networking? Because then you better book appointments ahead of time with the people who you would really like to get together with and make sure you get a ticket to your division's event because they almost all sell out. Are you looking for education on a specific topic? Because then you should make sure you go to the sessions on that topic. So Eve, what do you think? Tips for first timers or veteran attendees?
Yeah, like you, I wanted to say, you know, I think it's important to set goals, you make a schedule, you get some appointments, but I also think it's important to leave slots open for serendipitous encounters.
Because, good point,
you know,
yeah.
That's part of the conference too, that you have interesting people that you'll just meet because you're there and new people. So, and then kind of related to that, I think you do this too, but I always try to meet new people, and it's especially for those of us who've been going for years, and we think, oh, there's so-and-so, I'm so glad to see so-and-so, my old friend. And maybe for us too, that we're at our computers all day, we can be maybe less social people sometimes. I think it's good. You know, I always try to make sure I meet several new people and, you know, go out of my way to do that because it helps them and it helps me.
And it's really easy. I think once you're one of those people who knows a lot of people, it's really easy to spend the whole conference hanging out with like the same 5 people you do everything with. So don't do that.
And another way though, it's also easy because of the tone or the feel of the conference, it's very easy to introduce yourselves if you can make yourself do that, you know, because everyone's expecting that. That's just kind of the mood there. And so it's not like, oh, I'm too shy. You know, you can just, it's just easy to do if you could pick out anything like, oh, I like your pin on your badge, or I like your, you know, hair or whatever. I don't know, your shoes, or I'm just saying, you know, what language do you do? It's very easy to meet new people too, if you want to do that. So, and like Corinne, like you said, I like to expand my horizons too, try to go to 1 or 2 sessions outside my comfort zone, because sometimes I think, oh, I won't be interested in that topic, you know, but I learned something and I am interested and I realize it's really relevant to me. And you can always sit in the back and leave if you don't want to stay, you know, but I think it's good to try to get into things that are outside your comfort zone. And like I said before, I think going to the exhibit hall too is a way to get information about new ideas and new trends. And then also plan for some downtime. There's lots going on and you need a little quiet time, you know, just from all the hustle and bustle. And another tip that I know Corinne will agree with is stay in the conference hotel if you can. And if you want to stay in the conference hotel, book early because it'll fill up. And I have always appreciated, I make that a priority, and I've always appreciated being able to do that because you can dart up to your room really easily to drop something off or to get something that you forgot.
Change
your shoes. Yeah. Or just for a quick rest. Like I would go up there and I would set my phone timer and I would sleep for 15 minutes. Like just shut my eyes for 15 minutes. And it helped me to have more energy for the day. And then you stole my last tip, which was, do take lots of shoes. And as I talked about in the previous episode of the podcast, I did, but I still got a blister. So see how it works. Yeah. So. So that brings us to the end of this episode, and we wanted to thank all of you, our listeners, for your support. We really appreciate it, and it was really wonderful to meet so many of you at the conference in person.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and thanks to our super fans. You know who you are, and it was really sweet of you to come introduce one. And I say that again, not to brag, because one person actually came up to us and said, "I am your super fan."
We're just repeating what she said.
Yeah. it really warmed our hearts. And just as a reminder, if you're listening to this podcast on our website, you can subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. And if you enjoy the show, we would really, really appreciate a review on one of those sites because that helps new listeners find us. Thanks very much, and we will talk to you in a future episode.